You know, it's mentioned twice, once in the announcements and once during the presiding of the Lord's table, about this past week that we had here at Danville. I think it would be appropriate if I said a word or two about the fine series of studies that we had this past week. You know, when we schedule here a series of studies geared toward our young people, the vacation Bible studies that we had, we do this each year, it's because of our undying love and concern for these children. We recognize, as I often say to people, you know, we're all in this together. Those of us who are parents and grandparents, we want to see our children saved, and everything that we can do to help them in their learning and in their understanding of the will of God and perhaps making their lives consistent with that word, we want to do. That's why the elders schedule this. And I, you know, just some, you just have a variety of thoughts when you look back on the week that we had together. I am just welled up with appreciation to those teachers who sacrificed of their time to teach these young people, for the song leaders who took part in this. You helped make it what it was, and to our invited guests who came, Brother Josh McKibben taught our young teenagers, our young people's class, and then of course Brother Vernon Teagarden, who came to teach the adults. You know, Sister Teagarden made the observation that we really know how to do a VBS here, and I think she's right about that. If there's anything that could have made it better, I think it would have been that our adults got serious in coming. This is not just for young people, it's for our adults as well. We had an excellent adult teacher. And I think it would have behooved us as members here, to older members, to come and take part in that, be a part of it. Also, we should not, as parents, let anything detract us that week from making sure that not only our children, but we're here to participate in this excellent study. I just think it was a fantastic week that we had together, and I'm already excited about the possibility of us doing this again next year. So those are just some remarks that I wanted to make, I believe were sort of appropriate based upon what we did this past week. You know, when you look at the history of America, you have to recognize that there were some infamous traitors that are associated with our history here, and our history is not all that long. And you know, when I began to think about the infamous traitors of our in the history of this country, of course, we have to think of a recent traitor, a man by the name of Robert Hansen. They made a movie about this guy. He was a former Chicago policeman. He got into the CIA. And he decided then that he was going to sell secrets to the Soviet Union. And he did, and that exposed a lot of our counterintelligence people, and many of them were slain as a result of Robert Hansen's espionage and as a result of his being a traitor. But even beyond him was a man by the name of Aldrich Ames. And Ames was a man that was greedy, and I'll tell you what, now, he decided that he was going to sell secrets to the Soviet Union, and he did it just purely for money. There was no, ideology behind it. He just wanted money. For about $4.6 million, over a period of time, he exposed a number of our counterintelligence, those who would be double agents, and resulted in at least 10 Americans being put to death because of his espionage activities. And then there's another that I think is an infamous traitor in the history of America that often isn't viewed that way, and that's actress Jane Fonda. During the Vietnam War, she went over and she toured the anti-aircraft guns of the North Vietnamese Army, and then she interviewed some of our soldiers who had been captured, and she listened to them and encouraged them to just enjoy your benevolent treatment here at the hands of your captors. And they tried to tell her, you know, we're being tortured, we're being mistreated. And she wouldn't believe that, and she come out against America's efforts. And so while she may not be viewed as a traitor, I certainly consider her actions to be traitors during the Vietnam War. And then there, of course, is Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, who were executed because of their espionage activities back in 1953. They were selling the Soviets' secrets on our atomic industry and some of the things that the atomic industry were developing. But when you look at the infamous traitors in the history of America, of course, the granddaddy of all would be Benedict Arnold. His name is associated with being a traitor. You're just a Benedict Arnold. And we understand what that means when people use that. It means that he just was somebody who turned his back upon it. He was a general in the Continental Army during the Revolutionary War. And he was made commander of a fort at West Point, New York, and he plotted with the British, you know, to surrender that fort. And he was a traitor. And after he was exposed in 1780, then he became a brigadier general in the British Army. But when we look at people like this, we understand just how heinous it is to be a traitor in this regard. Now, in our text that was read just a few moments ago, and by the way, young man, you did an excellent job in the reading of that text. In our text, we find that Jesus is dealing with or having a conversation with probably the most well-known traitor of all times, and that is Judas Iscariot. I want you to think about this. Judas was from a region in Judah near the town of Hebron. And as a matter of fact, he was from a region called Keroth. And Keroth, that's an interesting term. That's an interesting name because Iscariot is a term that means man of Keroth. It's sort of a Hebrew term, or maybe we should say that it would be an Aramaic term, perhaps, meaning man of Keroth. As a matter of fact, Judas was the only disciple of the Lord. He was the only apostle of Christ that was actually from the tribe of Judah, the same tribe as Jesus. But yet he became a traitor. He was the one who betrayed the Lord. And you know, when you think about this, you think about the name Judas. You know, how many of us would be willing to name a son Judas? I don't think any Bible believer would ever name a son Judas. Now, I've seven grandsons. They all have Bible names, but I tell you what, when they were thinking about these names, I don't believe Judas was one of those names that they considered to name one of their sons, when he was born. But you know, it wasn't always that way. Judas was at one time an honorable name. It was a name that was found throughout the history of the Hebrew people. You take the name Judas or Jude or Judah, these are all, really basically the same names with just a slightly different ending. And so, that was at one time a pretty honorable name. As a matter of fact, it was one of the 12 tribes that we mentioned just a little bit ago, the tribe of Judah or Jude or Judas. And it was also the name of a great patriot who lived between the times of the Testaments, by the name of Judas Maccabees. He was a revolutionary hero insofar as the Hebrew people is concerned, and he had an honorable name. As a matter of fact, there was another apostle also named Judas in Luke chapter 6 and verse 16, and this was also a name of one of the brothers of Jesus. And so we see the name Judas, at one time it was okay. At one time it was a very popular name. And a man by the name of Simon from Keroth named his son Judas Iscariot, and he also became an apostle of the Lord. But I'll tell you about that. You wouldn't think about using that name today because it's always associated with being a traitor. And there's no way that we can associate it with any other thing than being a traitor of the Lord. I'm going to tell you something. When you think about the deeds of Judas, and you think about what he did, in betraying the Lord for 30 pieces of silver, which would have been an equivalent to less than $100 in our currency today, there's no way you can whitewash his sin. Now, I know there are a lot of people today who want to whitewash the sin of Judas. How well, you know, maybe he had some good intent. There's any way that we can come in and say Judas did this for any reason other than that he yielded himself to sin. You look at this passage here in Matthew chapter 26. One of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priest and said, now here's what Judas said, what are you willing to give me? I'm going to give you the Lord. What are you willing to give me? I'm going to betray Jesus. So what are you going to give me? And they counted out to him 30 pieces of silver. So from that time, he sought opportunity to betray Jesus. Now, like I said, you can't whitewash this in any way, shape, manner, or form. As a matter of fact, back in John chapter 12 and verse 6, when Mary wanted, you know, she broke this ointment out and she anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair, why, Judas was, he was incredulous over this. Why, Judas said, we should have given that, but we should have sold that and given the money to the poor. But now John records that Judas said that not because he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief. And he was pilfering the money that was used to support Jesus and the other apostles. He was just a crook. He was just a thief at this time. I said, when he said what he did to the chief priest, it was because of the condition of his heart there. And then we find in John chapter 19 and verse 11, Jesus said in his conversation with Pilate, in describing what Judas did, he said, therefore the one who has delivered me to you has the greater sin. Oh, it was a sin what Judas did. All that. Now, there may have been some fringe reasons. I don't know how he developed himself to this point. There may have been some fringe reasons. Somebody said, well, maybe he was jealous because he wasn't one of the inner three. He wasn't James or John or Peter. So maybe he just become disillusioned with the Lord. Well, I don't know what these fringe reasons are, but the bottom line is greed or covetousness was what drove Judas to do what he did. Consider what is said in the 22nd chapter of the book of Luke. It said that Satan entered into Judas. I'm going to tell you what that means is, that means that Judas succumbed to temptation. It means that Judas yielded himself to the temptations of Satan, which involved greed or covetousness. You know, Paul said in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10 that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. I'm going to tell you, when you have that sort of attitude and that sort of heart, and the devil then begins to dangle some of this silver, some of this gold, and some of the things that the world has to offer, then one will yield himself and allow then Satan to enter into his heart. And he sold out the Lord for 30 pieces of silver, according to Exodus 21 and verse 32, was the price of a dead slave that had been gored by an ox accidentally. So if I had a slave and he was dead, he's worth 30 pieces of silver. And that's all that the Lord would have been worth to Judas. I'm going to tell you something about greed, my friend. Greed is the logical result of the belief that there is no afterlife. So if there's nothing we've got to look forward to, and there's no judgment to come, then just get all that you can get right now by unscrupulous means, by hook or by crook, just get it all now and use it and live it up now, because there's nothing coming beyond now. And I'll tell you, so somebody's involved in greed or covetousness, it's because he or she does not, regardless of what is professed, does not believe in the afterlife. So grab it all now and hold on to it tight. I'm going to tell you, greed's not something that's only the sin of the super rich. We look at people like, Warren Buffett or Bill Gates or some of these people that are super rich. Those people are greedy. They're just covetous, they're just parsimonious to the core. I'm going to tell you, greed is not just a sin of the super rich. It's a sin of, somebody can be poor and be greedy. Somebody can be poor and have the love of money. There's no question about that. I read something one time. Maybe you saw it. You read about this fellow. He was a multimillionaire, and he set his sights on committing adultery with someone else's wife. And so he began to talk to her, and he became acquainted with her, and he offered her $1 million to commit adultery. And she agreed to do this. And after she agreed to do this, he said, "How about I give you $30 to commit adultery?" And she said, "What do you mean $30? What do you think I am?" He said, "We've already established that. We're just now haggling over the price." And I'm telling you, you don't have to be rich. You don't have to be a Bill Gates. But when you begin to compromise with the devil, and you begin to involve yourselves in the things of this world because of your love of money, rich or not, it's the same thing that contributed to the selling out of Jesus. What does a man profit if he gain the whole world and lose his soul, Jesus asked in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 26. And I'm going to tell you what, Judas profited himself 30 pieces of silver. And that's what he got for betraying the Lord. And I want us to return to our text for just a moment. And let's begin to examine this just a little bit. Now, Jesus was at the last Passover, and he was instituting the Lord's Supper, about to institute the Lord's Supper. And he's beginning to have this conversation with his disciples. And he answered and said, somebody here at this table is going to betray me. So Peter said, "Well, is it me? Is it I? John, is it I?" You know, the disciples begin to ask, "Well, who are you talking about, Lord? You said somebody here is doing this." And he said, "Well, he who dipped his hand with me in the dish will betray me." Now he said, "I'll tell you what, I'm going to go as it is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had not been born." Then Judas. Oh, this is an amazing verse. Verse 25 is an amazing verse to me. Then Judas, who was betraying him, answered and said, "Rabbi, is it I?" Jesus, is it me? Am I going to be the one that betrays you? You know, like all sinners, I do believe that he must have thought that somehow or another he could conceal his greed, and he could conceal his treachery from the Lord. Yeah, is it me? You got to be kidding. You got to be kidding. He really thought that he could get away with this? You know, he really thought the Lord didn't know what he was up to. He really thought the Lord didn't see what he was about. Is it me, Jesus? Am I going to be the one to do this? I got to tell you something. We might hold hate in our heart and think we got away, but you know, the Lord knows. Is it I, Lord, who hate? Is it I, Lord, who am greedy? Is it I, Lord, who am cunning? Is it I, Lord, who have evil thoughts? You know, as though this is something the Lord doesn't see. I look back at old David, you know, in 2 Samuel chapter 11, when he committed adultery with Bathsheba. I'm going to tell you, this guy went to great lengths to cover it up. He did everything in the world to hide this sin and to cover it up. And yet Nathan said to him in 2 Samuel chapter 12, God said, "You are the man. You can't conceal this thing from, is it I? Rabbi, am I the one going to betray you?" David tried to cover it up. And it seems to me that that's exactly what Judas was trying to do. He's trying to cover it up. But he couldn't do it. And so he goes out to take care of what it was that he wanted to do. Now Jesus and the other apostles, they went up to the Garden of Gethsemane. And Jesus prayed, and while he was in the garden, he was talking to the disciples, and Judas, one of the 12, came with a great multitude with swords and clubs. And his betrayer had given them a sign saying, "Whomever I kiss, he is the one, seize him." Immediately went up to Jesus and said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and kissed him. Is it I? Am I the one? And he already had this thing planned out. Jesus said to him, "Friend, why have you come?" Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and took him. And I'm telling you, as a result of that, he become a backstabber, he become a turncoat, he become a traitor, and his name will ever be associated with being a betrayer of the Lord. And I'm going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that's not the end of the story. As a matter of fact, to get to the end of the story, we're going to have to try to combine a couple of passages here. Matthew chapter 27 and Acts chapter 1. In Matthew chapter 27 and verse 5, we find that Judas hanged himself. Now, Peter in his sermon mentions that falling headlong, he burst open in the middle and all his entrails gushed out. So I'm going to tell you what we find out about this. Now, as a result of what Judas did, this was a man who then committed suicide. And he couldn't tell. He saw that Jesus was going to be condemned, and he committed suicide. Somebody said one time, said on that day when Judas betrayed the Lord, two people died. Jesus, of course, died as a result of the treachery of Judas, but Judas himself also died that day. He committed suicide. Now, I want to tell you about it. You know, the Bible says that Judas was seized with remorse. We'll look at that passage more in just a minute. He was seized with remorse when he saw that the Lord was going to be condemned, and he went out and hanged himself. I just can't deal with this. I just can't handle this. I just can't face what I've done. It seems to be the storyline on Judas here. So when he was seized with remorse, and he went to his compatriots in crime, and he said, "Hey, let me give you this money back." And no, we don't want it back. We don't want it back. And so they turned their back on him. And he'd already turned his back on the Lord. So what's the answer here? Just commit suicide. I'm done. I'm done with it. I just, you know, no place else to turn. You know, I have to tell people, what in the world are we thinking? When we want to turn our back upon the Lord of glory and the Lord of hope, and we want to put our trust and our confidence in those in the world, and I'm going to tell you something, they will turn their back upon us and they will grind us into the dust just as quick as you can think it. They don't care anything about us. Judas, he made this plot with all the... These are the ones that I'm more closely associated with here. And so he made his covenant with them. And then when he saw that he couldn't undo what he had done here, there's nothing left to do but to commit suicide. And so he died alone by his own hands. I'm telling you, Peter also says something else about this in the first chapter of the book of Acts. He said not only did he die by his own hands, but that he might go to his own place. Now, he was called the son of perdition by Jesus in John chapter 17 and verse 12. Now, what that means is that he went to hell. I know that's not a popular thing to say anymore, you know. We've got to be more pragmatic in our approach to this. But he died and was going straight to hell. Now, there's no way that you can dress this up any more than you can dress up the sin that Judas committed. He was deceived by Satan. He allowed Satan to enter into his heart, and now he's going to spend an eternity in hell with Satan. It didn't have to be that way. He didn't have to go in that direction, but he did. He walked away from the Lord, threw his lot with those who were enemies of Christ, and then he betrayed the Lord, and now he commits suicide so that Peter said he can go to his own place. You know, he could have done exactly what Peter did. Peter denied the Lord three times, and yet Peter was restored to the Lord, but not Judas. Judas didn't try to find his way back to the Lord. Instead, he hanged himself, and he went to hell. What else? Well, Peter said in verse 25 that Judas, by transgression, fell. And this tells us that he wasn't programmed, he wasn't predisposed to do what he did. God didn't decide when Judas was being conceived. Now, you know what? I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm just going to put a
a rebellious DNA gene in him. I'm going to make his DNA such that he's not going to be able to help himself, and he grows up, he's just going to betray my son. That didn't happen. Judas was not pre-programmed. He was not predisposed. He was not oriented, if you please, to destruction and to deceit and to betraying the Lord. This was something that he chose to do. He made the choice to do what he did. He chose that course of action that resulted in him committing suicide and going to hell. Oh, by the way, you notice what Peter said about him? Said he was numbered, verse 17, with us, and he obtained part of this ministry. Now, I'm telling you, what Peter is saying there about Judas very simply is this. You know, Judas had been a real disciple. He wasn't a phony. Not from the, Jesus knew from the beginning that it was going to pray, but Peter said, hey, he was numbered with us. He was just like James, John, Bartholomew, Philip, you know, the other Judas and Simon. He was just like all of these. He was a real apostle. He fell from this apostleship, verses 23 and 24 said, that same sermon, or the same dialogue that Peter was having there. And so he was a real apostle. As a matter of fact, he might have been someone that they trusted somewhat because he was the treasurer. He kept the money back. And so, you think about this, he walked with the Lord for 3.5 years. He saw the miracles that Jesus did. He was with the apostles when Jesus was in the boat and Peter walked upon the water. He observed that. He was there at the tomb of Lazarus when Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. He observed that. He saw the miracles that Jesus did. For 3.5 years, he sat at the feet of Jesus. He would have heard the sermons of Jesus, such as the Sermon on the Mount. He saw the multitudes coming to Jesus, and he saw Jesus' interaction with them. He saw this. He was part of that. He was at the last Passover. He was there when Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper, and he was there and took his sandals off while the Lord washed his feet. And he saw all of this. And he was part of it. But he chose to become a thief, and he chose to betray the Lord. He planned it out, and he sought opportunity to do it, Matthew 26 and verse 16. And where did he do it? He did it in the most hallowed place that Jesus would go while he was upon this earth, beside the temple. He did it at the Mount of Olives in Gethsemane, where Jesus would go to be alone, where Jesus would go to pray. He took those guards to the most vulnerable place and kissed the Lord and betrayed him. Why did he do it? Because he chose to do it. Now I'm going to tell you something about choices. Now, there are a lot of people who either never will come to the Lord or they walk away from the Lord. And they're going to give us all kinds of fringe reasons why they do this. You know, somebody, well, I'll tell you why. There's nothing but a bunch of hypocrites down there. And it doesn't matter what local congregation you can talk about, whether you talk about Danville, whether you talk about Brownsburg, Plainfield, Traders Point, doesn't make any difference. People will say, I'll tell you what, I'm not going to serve God because they're hypocrites in that church. And there may be. There absolutely may be. People not what they ought to be. And so people say, well, I'll tell you why. I'm just not going to become a Christian because they're hypocrites in that congregation. Or somebody may say, well, you know what? I'm not going to become a Christian. I know I can't live it. I know what's in my heart, and I know how weak and vulnerable I am, and I just can't live faithful unto death. So, not going to do it. And you know what? There are some people who won't live faithful unto death. I grant you that. There are some people who will not be faithful to the Lord. And there are other people who say, well, you know, I'm not going to become a Christian. Somebody hurt my feelings. I'm going to tell you, somebody in that church, they said something to me 25 years ago, just cut me to the quick, cut me to the bone. I'll never become a Christian. So long as those people are alive, I'll never darken the door where they are. And you know, that's probably so. So they probably hurt them. Probably said something a long time ago, maybe through vengeance or anger or maybe even just ignorance.
Somebody says, well, you know what?
I'm not going to be a Christian because, well, I'll tell you what, Mom and Dad drugged me to church ever since I was old enough to remember. Man, I've sat in those Bible classes, and I've heard about Zacchaeus shimmying up that sycamore tree so many times I could tell it in my sleep. I'm not going again because I was forced to go as a child. And you know what? That may be true. That person's mom or dad may have insisted that he or she go to church services. But I'm going to tell you something, regardless of what the fringe or the peripheral excuse that is being used is for not becoming a Christian, you know, the bottom line is simply this person does not choose to be a Christian. That's it. It's a choice. So why don't we just pony up and say, you know what? I'm not serving the Lord because I don't want to serve the Lord. I'm not a Christian because I don't want to be a Christian. I'm not faithful because I don't want to be faithful. Judas made that choice. Now you can dress it up, you can, you know, camouflage, you can do whatever you want to with it. But the bottom line is he, by transgression, failed because of a choice that he made. This was a choice that Judas wanted to make. You know, I talk a bit about, you know, maybe falling away from the Lord or may never become a Christian, you know. Hey, you can line these things up. You can make them as long as a telephone pole, but the bottom line is, when you look right down here at the bottom, is I do not choose to be a Christian. Judas chose his course of action. And he, Peter said, by transgression, failed. Now let's go back to Matthew 25. And I want you to notice something there. We find that when he saw that Jesus was condemned, he brought the money back. He brought the 30 pieces of silver back to the chief priest. He said, I have sinned by betraying innocent blood. And they said, what is that to us? You see to it. You know what that tells me? That tells me that it was impossible for him to undo what he did. The die had been cast. This thing was now in motion. The plan was now being carried out. There's no way you can stop it. There's no way that now you can say, well, you know what? Let's, you know, time out here. Let's rewind the tape and let's start at the beginning. Let me do this again. Let me change that. You can't do that. He could not stop the progress or the process that he had begun. Now, when he saw that Jesus was what was condemned, he saw that Jesus was going to be put to death, why he wanted to stop it. And I don't know why, but now he decided that he wanted to stop it. But those with whom he conspired, they didn't care about his concern. Yeah, that's not my problem. That's not my problem. That's your problem. You made that choice. That's your problem. You deal with it. You know. This happens a lot. You know, you take, and I stress this till I just feel like I'm just about to pop a vein to these young people. You know, do not ever involve yourself with tobacco products, whether it's smoking tobacco or whether it is smokeless tobacco. Stay away from that. Because I'm going to tell you something, once you develop oral or lung cancer, there's no stopping that. You can't go back and say, you know, that's the biggest mistake I ever made. Don't do it. You get something started, you can't stop it. That's just the way it is with Judas here. And I just, you know, same thing could be said about the use of illicit drugs or alcohol. Why do you want to start that? Why do you want to begin the process that will destroy your health and destroy your soul? Why do that? Once it gets started, you can't stop it. That's the way it was with Judas. Young girl, a young guy may decide, you know, well, I'll tell you what, we're just a whole lot in love and we're going to start being promiscuous with each other and we're going to start having sexual relations with each other. And then suddenly they realize that a child has been conceived.
Now, I'm going to tell you something. The world has made it so that it seems like you can rewind and start all over. You can go down to Planned Parenthood and you can pay an abortionist down there to take the life of that child. Yes, you can. But I'm going to tell you what you cannot undo. You cannot blot out the memory. And every year, what would have been the birthday of that child, you're going to think about it. And it's going to eat at you. And it's going to gnaw at you. And you cannot undo it. It's there. There's some things that we just simply cannot go back and correct. And that's true. I tell you, that's even true sometimes in the area of divorce. You know, a couple may be having some problems. They may be on some rocky ground here, you know. And they may just decide, you know, I just can't stand it anymore. So I'm just going to leave him or I'm going to leave her and I'm going to find me somebody else. I don't know how many times that I've heard from somebody that has made those choices. 5 or 10 years later, tell me, J.R., that's the biggest mistake I ever made. I'd give anything if we'd worked out the problems. It's too late. Judah said, hey, I want to stop. Time out here. I don't want this thing to go through. That's, well, I tell you what, that's not our problem. That's your problem. You made the choice. Now you're just going to have to live with it. That's the way the world, that's the way the devil is. Hey. You made your choice. You deal with it. Anytime anyone like Judas leaves the Lord, I'm going to tell you something, my friend. Self-destruction is the only thing that is awaiting that person. You know, Jesus said of Judas, hey, you know what? It would have been better if this man had never lived. I would hate to think that I lived upon this earth for however many years the Lord lets me live upon this earth. And then when I hear the Lord tell me at judgment day, depart from me, I don't know you. You know, cast this unprofitable servant into the lake of fire where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. I'd hate to think, you know, that I'm going to spend an eternity regretting the fact that I was ever born and that I ever breathed air. Doesn't have to be that way. Judas didn't have to wind up where he did. He did that because he chose to do it. We don't have to be lost. God has loved us so greatly that He sent Jesus from heaven to die upon the cross so that we could have the remission of our sins. He became the propitiation, the appeasement, so that we could be saved. But we've got to take advantage of that. We've got to be baptized into His blood. Romans 6, verses 3 and 4. Believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, we can repent of our sins. That's turn from them. Abandon them. Confess our faith that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. We can be baptized in water for the remission of our sins. We can die in hope after we've lived our life here upon this earth if we've remained faithful to the Lord. It was better that Judas had never been born. What about you? You're subject to the invitation. Won't you come right now as together we stand as we sing.